Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, Trey Kaufman.
Hello!
Hey. Hi. How are you?
Good. I'm sad that we're, what, 2 chapters from the end?
I know. It's so crazy that we just don't have much left. But it's so exciting to finally get to these chapters where all the stuff comes to the end, like all the answers come. So that part is fun.
Yeah. No, this is, it's good from a material standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's sad from a, it's at the end standpoint. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I did want to say a quick thank you to, we got some emails, Treya, from Syria. That's her name. And we also got email there from Anna. And we got an email from Lucia. And so we just wanted to say thank you to all of them for their emails. Really appreciate them sending those in. And some of the stuff they had in the emails there was a little more personal, so I didn't want to read them on the air. But really appreciate you guys sending your emails. It means so much. So glad that you're listening. And, you know, one refrain we've heard, Drea, is that so many people have enjoyed listening to us over the crazy, you know, 2020 year. And yeah, we're just excited that we were there for anyone. And yeah, we've got a few more episodes left for you, which, man, I can't believe it. After this, there are only 3 left.
Oh my goodness. I think when we do our last episode, it will be interesting because I will be fully vaccinated after our episode. So I'm not sure how that lined up, but it lined up real nicely.
There you go. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, before we get into the episodes, of course, just a quick reminder, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can still give us a review and we'll read those, the last reviews that come as we wrap up the show. We really appreciate everybody who's done that. You know, this has been a huge show. You know, honestly, it's the biggest show that I do podcasting wise with the numbers that we get. It's insane. Like, people seem to love this show, Drea, and they seem to love you and sometimes me. So
I'm sure they love you. Stop it.
So it's been great, though. And of course, you could find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty, thenerdparty.com. And of course, you can send us an email over at thenerdparty.com/contact. So we are at King's Cross. And well, Drea, Harry wakes up naked.
I think I completely forgot he woke up naked. Yeah. And it caught me off guard, and I was like, what? We go this whole chapter with him naked? Which, I mean, spoiler alert, we don't. But yeah, he kind of like wakes up in this like misty, not cloudy, not misty, but like very ethereal space, and he kind of remembers what happened last, but doesn't really know where he is. Is he dead? Is he alive? What is that noise? And he's just like, everything is so bright.
Yeah, I do love that. You know, for a few minutes he's not like weirded out that he's naked, and then he's like, you know what, I need clothes, and like immediately the robes appear that he can put on. And
I like that they're warm, though. Yeah, I want to imagine if I could just make those appear, they would be warm and cozy like that.
Like when you know, get your clothes fresh out of the dryer, you know?
Yes.
So, and he realizes this noise is this, like, ugly, deformed, nasty-looking, naked baby. And it's, like, struggling to breathe. And before he can kind of, like, figure it out, guess who's here?
Dumbledore!
Dumbledore! Oh, man. Oh, man. You know, I think it's really interesting. Before we even dive into what they talk about, I think one of the things that is fascinating about this is that, you know, a lot of my love for Dumbledore actually comes from this last chapter that he's in, you know, which you know, people and Hermione even talked about in this book about how Dumbledore loved Harry. And this chapter really legitimizes exactly what Hermione said earlier in the book. And, you know, I just love the way that he, you know, he comes up to Harry. He's like, "You wonderful, you brave, brave man, let's walk." And they're going to walk and they're going to talk in this place. And they are going to answer a ton of questions about a lot of the things that we still have questions about, which is a lot of fun that we are finally going to get those answers.
We also get a very human Dumbledore here, right? I think most of the books we as kind of parallel to Harry have put him on a pedestal, right? Like we've talked a little bit about that. Like he thought, and he still sort of expresses in this chapter that Dumbledore is this great all-powerful wizard. And here we have Dumbledore basically saying, "No, I'm really, really not. I had to kind of self-regulate all of this because I made a lot of mistakes and I didn't trust myself. You know, and I was genuinely not as good a person as you are," right? He straight up says that at some point, like, I am not as selfless of a person as you are, Harry. You know, so we get a very human Dumbledore, which I think is nice. I think we all as people should understand that those we look up to are mentors, our parents, our teachers, whoever you want to throw into that category, they're all human, right? And while the point in which you meet them in your life, they may seem like these perfect, amazing beings, doesn't mean that they are, right? It's that moment we all wake up and realize our parents are not, you know, gods.
Yeah.
They're not perfect. Yeah. They're not amazing, right? This is that moment we get with Dumbledore. And I think Harry still kind of struggles with that a little bit, wants him to have more confidence and faith in himself than he does. There's some really beautiful, beautiful moments in here. But this, I think I agree with you. I love that we get Dumbledore in his full, flawed, human, got's good instincts glory here in this chapter. And he's everything we've ever needed.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I couldn't have said it better. I think that's one of the things that really makes this chapter great. And again, I think, you know, retroactively, it's the thing that makes this chapter for me love him so much, which is it. You can then retroactively understand as you reread the series all of the humanity of Dumbledore and really what a struggle this whole thing has been for him as well. And so, you know, they have the conversation about whether or not Harry's dead, and full Dumbledore says, "No, I don't think you're dead." And they kind of talk about this place that they're in, and Harry's like, "It really kind of looks like King's Cross, except a lot cleaner." And then we jump into this whole conversation of the fact that Harry let Voldemort kill him without trying to not die. And what's dying right now is the part of Voldemort's soul that was left in Harry, not Harry. And I think this whole thing about this discussion about going all the way back to the fourth book of where, you know, Voldemort had insisted that he take Harry's blood. And so because of that, he now carries a piece of Lily's sacrifice in himself. That's what's keeping Harry alive, is now this connection they have, which is doubly connected. And so I love this because it's the very last place in which Voldemort cannot understand the deeper magic, right? He cannot understand how dangerous Lily's sacrifice actually was to him, because he just doesn't get it. You know, he never got it. And I think that's the thing that makes this so interesting to me, because we really see how sad Voldemort really is as a person. Like, you know, like, he just, there's so much he just doesn't get.
Yeah, I mean, that even comes when we get in, and we're going to skip around here a little bit because there's just so much that happens in this chapter. But even when we start talking about the fact that, you know, Dumbledore says one of his greatest flaws is he was trying to become a master of death,
right?
But not the way that Voldemort is a master of death, right? Voldemort is a master of death and that he facilitates it and is avoiding it. Dumbledore was trying to do it in a less aggressive way, right? He wanted to avoid death, not conquer it per se, right? It's a little bit different. I think Harry says, like, yes, but you didn't kill people to avoid death, right? You just did what you could. And when we kind of looked at Voldemort, and I think there was a question of why didn't Voldemort go after the Hallows as well, is, you know, he was like, no, all he wanted, first of all he wanted is the wand, right? Because that's how he do. And that he wouldn't want the resurrection stone because he fears those people who have left before him. There's no one he loved. There was no one he would want to have a connection with from the other side. And that alone, I think, speaks volumes. The fact that there's not a single person who died that he would want to bring back with that stone. Mm-hmm. Or if you kind of think about it, I feel like people coming back from the stone need to want to come back from the stone too, right? They need to want that other person. There's no one who would want to see Riddle. I think the only thing we can think of is possibly his mom, but even then, I don't think so, right? And he certainly wouldn't want to see her.
Well, and Dumbledore even says, you know, he wouldn't ever want to have anything to do with the Resurrection Stone because he's afraid of death. You know, he fears death. He hasn't realized there are scarier things than dying, you know? And so, which is a very interesting statement in and of itself for her to be making. Like, there are worse things than the death. And Voldemort will probably experience those soon. So, I think one of the things that I really enjoyed as well is that on top of understanding why, you know, Harry hasn't died, why it was a mistake for Voldemort to take his own blood, Harry's blood, but we also learn about the wand. And Dumbledore has an explanation that he believes as to why, and why nobody else would know this, which is what Voldemort has done has connected him and Harry in a way that nobody could have ever suspected. And so his guess on why the wand did what it did was fascinating to me and just so cool. I just kind of loved that. It's something where, regardless of who you are, even if you were Ollivander, you wouldn't really have an answer for this because there's nobody in the world who's experienced a connection like this.
Yeah, all of this whole dynamic that Voldemort has sort of like self-created, which we talked about, I don't remember when, super early on, I think, when we started talking about the Hall of Prophecy. So what's that, book 4? I think it was book 5. But he is sort of self-deterred, like everything he's doing is setting this path up. From choosing to take the blood, like you said, which I love that the book has sort of like this emphasis on how special Harry's blood was and why it was such a big deal that what happened when he took Harry's blood instead of just anybody's blood, because technically he could have taken anybody's blood to come back from the grave, right? He just thought taking Harry's would make him stronger. The whole thing is just, it's such an intricate web he's created that no one could have figured out what it all meant, right? And there are so few people with the knowledge and the insight and the special insider in-depth understanding of everything besides Dumbledore. And even then, he says he's just guessing, right? Which becomes this kind of cute thing near the end when, you know, you explained about the wand, but you know, he said, well, I don't know, Harry. And he goes, well, give it a guess. After Dumbledore says that, you know, his guesses are usually pretty good. The whole thing is just, you know, we get, there's just so much. I don't even know. There's just so much. It closes. It basically takes any outstanding loophole that you didn't know why or what something happened and sort of answered it for us. At least speculated on its answer.
It's really interesting because the answer is that the wands, because they share a core, and because Voldemort and Harry share a part of each other, that Harry's wand has basically taken some of who Voldemort is in itself, and of course it also has Harry's courage. And so when they faced each other, where one, they recognize, like the wand recognizes that, you know, Harry is trying to be killed by the person who is also inside of him at the same time. So it's a self-defense mechanism that the Voldemort believes that the wand reproduced some of Voldemort's own magic against him to keep, you know, Harry from dying. Which, again, it kind of makes so much sense that, like, the way she explains this, and I just love the way that Dumbledore's like, I'm just guessing, but this is what I think, you know? And it just shows, obviously, how smart Dumbledore is. But yeah, I mean, I think what you were talking about with this whole idea of, like, the way in which the blood is so important. Like, I mean, this is so biblical. Like, you know, the idea of, like, sacrificial blood covering, you know, somebody and saving them. And it is something that it's actually going to, hint, hint, it's going to play into the next chapter, too, after Harry decides to go back. And so it's fascinating, like, what she's playing with and what she's doing here. So it makes it really good. And I love that Dumbledore explains to Harry finally as to why he didn't tell him everything. And part of that is because he was worried that Harry would go down the same path that he did. And he apologizes to Harry by saying, I should have known, and I knew long ago that you were a much better man than I was. And, but, you know, this kind of goes to show on how sometimes we don't trust people because we think they might make the same mistakes as we would. And we play that game of kind of maybe keeping things from somebody because of that reason. And so it makes sense. And I love that, you know, Harry understands too. He's not angry at Dumbledore anymore. He gets it now because he has all these answers finally. And I think what makes it interesting is that, you know, he's able to kind of see it from Dumbledore's point of view. And that's good too. Like, he doesn't immediately jump to, well, why didn't you tell me? You know, like, no, it makes sense, you know? So.
Yeah, I think this whole last part kind of, there's a lot of different things, but really the theme for me throughout this chapter is the amount of impact or influence someone's intention has on something, right? Like, we talk about Dumbledore's intentions of power and how he had to make choice. You know, they even talk about how he stays at Hogwarts as a teacher because it was safe for Dumbledore to not have any more power than that, right? Because, you know, his intentions were selfish. How Voldemort's intentions were all self-protecting and were to stay alive and avoid death because he was afraid, right? So fear was his motivator. And then we have Harry, who's selfless in everything he does. He is concerned about others and other people's being and you know, creating the best world for other people, all the way down to the very last decision at the end of this chapter. And even the wands, right? The intention of Harry trying to protect itself coming from a place of love versus Voldemort's coming from a place of fear, right? Love trumped fear. The whole thing comes back to all of that. And even, like you say, Dumbledore's decision to not share all of this information was because he was afraid of Harry's intentions, right? And he even chastises himself, kind of like you said, like, I should have, I knew better and I should have known that you would have been a bigger person and a better person than I was, but I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust myself to give you all the answers and let you make your own decisions. You know, I think fear and selflessness are kind of the two opposite sides of a coin here, right? And she really has equated selflessness with love for other people. So that whole fear and love parallel continues on and is basically, for me in this chapter, is like the key thing throughout the whole series is, what is your motivator? Are you afraid or are you protecting someone or something you love?
Yeah.
So I think that's huge. I do love, though, that Dumbledore calls out too at some point that, you know, he should have given it to Harry and let Hermione, I think he said, he had hoped that Miss Granger would slow them down, ask those thoughtful questions, challenge their use in their moving forward of collecting these Hallows, which she totally did. He nailed that one. But yeah, I do like that that was kind of his own little, like, well, I sort of had hoped that she would keep you guys at bay. It was cute.
No, you're absolutely right. That was so much fun. And it made sense. You know, this is one of the reasons why, you know, he told Harry that you should have Ron and Hermione with you. You know, he knew that he was going to need both pieces of that puzzle together, right? And, you know, I loved him also explaining all about, you know, the Hallows and that, yes, they were real. And, you know, he does think that the Peveril brothers existed and that they probably were just people who had created these themselves. And... you know, they're just incredible wizards who had created these items themselves. And then these items had been passed down from generation to generation, or, like, you know, the Elder Wand had passed from people because of duels. And so what you see here is, you know, Harry is actually a descendant of the Peverils, like, because that's how it was passed down in the family with the cloak. And so that's why he has that. But the fact that what, you know, Grindelwald wanted out of this, he wants to be Master of Death, but he doesn't really care so much about the cloak, and neither did, like, Dumbledore at that point, because he just figured, well, maybe I'll be able to hide, you know, my sister on these adventures we go on. But what they're obviously after is the power. And for Grindelwald, the Resurrection Stone, he says, would only been basically a way to bring back an army of Inferi, which is, like, talk about so scary. And I loved that Dumbledore talks about the fact that he had to talk himself into the fact that Grindelwald wasn't that bad, right? Because some of what he said really struck him, right? And yet that allowed him to be able to do that kind of mental gymnastics. And then, of course, the moment where the argument happened and Ariana dies, everything shatters, you know, like, he can't. And he's always lived with the fact that he doesn't know if it was his spell or Grindelwald's spell that killed his own sister.
Well, and even here, we don't, it's not even that it's important, right? Because even there's even a moment where Harry kind of questions, like, he doesn't really want to know, and he doesn't really want Dumbledore to tell him one way or the other, right? Because it really doesn't matter who, it just matters that it happened. And that was, like, the turning point for him, right? That was that straw that broke the camel's back. But again, that's just so relatable. Like, how often do we, as humans, as people, have to talk ourselves into something or find a way to justify some behavior for others, right? Like, how often do we find ourselves bargaining with, like you said, this isn't that bad, or there's worse, or there's better out there, right? Like, I'm a good person because I am better than this person, right? Like, that is such a human thing to do and a natural thing for us to want, to sort of, like, self-justify our decisions and behaviors and choice in leaders and things like that. So, you know, I think it's a totally normal thing, and it's so interesting to see him go through that here, right? And to know on the other end that this was absolutely the wrong person for him to align himself with. Not as, you know, maybe as bad as Voldemort, but in a different way, right? More of a dictator raising an army versus a, I don't know, like a murdering psychopath, right? I don't know. Grindelwald feels a little different than Voldemort. There's a lot in common, but, you know, they kind of had different approaches, mm-hmm. right? One was the stand-up of all wizards and wizarding kind, and the other is a pure blood sort of genocide happening amongst themselves. Both horrible and terrible, but different, right? And so you can see how he would have kind of justified it. But honestly, the interesting thing for me here too is Grindelwald and Voldemort are both incredibly, incredibly talented and smart people, right? Incredibly smart wizards. And that is what even Dumbledore says drew him to Grindelwald, is that he was a brilliant young leader who also wanted power like he did. And that is, you know, attractive, and a lot of people desire that. So mm-hmm. it's just so interesting to see all of this kind of come out.
There is one main difference though, because, you know, Harry reminds and, you know, tells Dumbledore, because Dumbledore wouldn't have known this by the time he died, but the last act that Grindelwald actually did was to lie to Voldemort about the wand. And the fact that he seems to have had a change of heart in prison. And Dumbledore had heard those rumors, but it seems
to have repentance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there is a difference between these two characters, which I think when, you know, we're watching the Fantastic Beasts series makes for such a fascinating look at then this character who we know is going to, by the end of his life, completely regret his choices, which is really interesting. And again, that's the difference between the two characters there, between Voldemort and Grindelwald. So I really love that.
No. But I definitely think, I like that it's like two different bad guys, right? Like, or in this sense, it's two different like antagonists, right? Like they're both people we fear who had sort of malicious intentions, but very, very different. And it's nice to see that mm-hmm. variety in your antagonists, and not that they're all of one breed, right? Or they're not just all categorized as pure evil. There's human and sort of dynamics to all of them as well.
Yes. Well, and part of that is that, like you said, in the end, this really does come down to the selfish desires, right? You know, and that changes everything. You know, those characters, not only were they smart and talented, but they were also ambitious for power. And
they were blind. Everything they did wrong, including Dumbledore too, were blinded by emotion, right? So like most of the time, Voldemort and Grindelwald, it's fear. We find out that Dumbledore was blinded by this like need to see his sister again. So he picked up the ring and put mm-hmm. the ring on, thinking it was the Resurrection Stone, forgetting that it was a Horcrux, and cursed himself, right? And he goes, he basically says, man, that was dumb.
He says that he still hadn't learned after all these years.
After all that, he was like, man, I made such a stupid error. And that's what ended up costing him his life, right? Ultimately, that was why he asked Snape to kill him, is because that cursed him, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think it's so interesting that all of these like impulses and emotional decisions are the ones that are the worst, are the right ones that tripped everyone up, right? Like even Voldemort killing Harry's parents after his mom gave his blessing, mm-hmm. that was like an emotionally driven decision, right? So, you know, all of this, all of kind of the things that catch them up or their downfalls were all right because of their acting from a place of self-preservation and emotional mm-hmm. need versus an external, a selfless motivator. Yeah.
Well, and Dumbledore explains to Harry too, it's like, you know, I took the cloak out of vain curiosity. I would have taken the stone to attempt to drag people back who are at peace, whereas you, for self-sacrifice, And in the end, you are the worthy, you know, possessor of the Hallows. You're the one. And because you did none of this out of vain ambition or selfish conceit, which is actually a Bible verse. And that's who Harry is, right? He is that person who is doing this all selflessly. And that is the main difference.
Yeah, and even in that moment, I'm so sorry. Even in that moment, he jumps on this opportunity to tell Dumbledore, like, the fact that he had the cloak was not, like, a make-or-break-it moment for his parents. Like, it wouldn't have made a difference if his mom and dad had the cloak or didn't have the cloak. Voldemort knew where they were. They were going to die at that point either way, and he shouldn't blame himself, essentially, is what he said. Like, you didn't change that course of history by having that. And he immediately knew that there was, like, a feeling of guilt there that went along with that. And he wanted him to know that that curiosity didn't kill his parents.
Right.
That he is not blaming him whatsoever. Which, again, is another selfless moment. Harry could have easily jumped on all of these and been like, you could have saved my parents. That could have saved my parents. Could have changed the course of things. But he was like, it couldn't have. It's okay.
Right.
Like, give yourself a break.
Well, and I love, you know, as we get to the end of the chapter, you know, the whole idea that we're at King's Cross, you know, like we're at this place where Harry could go on, and Dumbledore says he would just go on, you know, as basically we know, I mean, like Sirius going through the veil, and or he could go back, and he says, you know, that he thinks that if he returns, Harry has a good chance of finishing this for good, and that a lot less people may die if Harry goes back as well. And I really love his statement where he says, you know, do not pity the dead, Harry. Pity the living, and above all else, those who live without love. And it's such a beautiful statement, because the thing to which Rowling has been writing this whole time is that she has been writing about what it means to love truly, which is self-sacrificial love. Like, that is what she has been pointing at this whole time. And it is the heroes of the story are the ones who love self-sacrificially. And I think that that's such a really beautiful thing. And in the very last line of this chapter, she gets super metaphysical, where Harry's like, has this been happening all in my head? And Dumbledore's like, of course it has, but that doesn't mean it's not real. And it was like, wow, what a way to wrap up the chapter.
Yeah. And I do love, we didn't talk about it, but I think the movie does a terrible job of explaining where they are, what's going on, right? Because there's lots of speculation. This could be purgatory. This could be in his head. This could be heaven. Who knows, right? It's not super duper clear here. You can kind of make a case for any of them, right? But I do love that in this chapter, they literally explain, we talked about his blood being magical, but the reason why he has the opportunity to go back is because part of his mother's charm tied him to Voldemort. So Voldemort made him a Horcrux, and then his mother's charm sort of countered that and said, oh, well, that's great. I'm going to tie my son back to you. And as long as you're still alive, he'll still be alive, right? So inevitably what happened in the last chapter is half of that was severed. And now it's that, you know, Voldemort made the choice to sever that half. And now Harry gets to make the choice of how the other half is severed. Does he move on, like to your point, through the veil? Or does he go back? And how you know, Dumbledore explains it, if he can prevent more families from being torn apart. And if he felt like that's a worthy cause, then maybe he should go back. And when the way he laid that out to Harry, I sort of felt like there was no choice. Harry didn't have a choice at that point, right? Like you're going back, man. Everything about Harry's character says that he would find that a worthy cause and he should go back.
Well, and I mean, because Harry has the opportunities to save people's lives, have less families torn apart, like his life, by going back, his life will mean less pain for others. And again, it's just, it's so Christological.
That's so him.
Yeah, and
right?
It's so
like,
Harry,
that's him.
Right?
Like, like, you tell him that. He's like, I don't know why you're giving me a choice. That's not a choice anymore, man. Like, yeah. I'm going back, right? Even if I can't stop him, if I can stop one more family from being torn apart, then I will, right? If he can do one more nice thing for someone else before his life was to end, he would absolutely do that.
Yep.
So, yeah, I like that the choice is a non-choice according to like his character. But yeah, I think it ends beautifully, and we have, I think, what, two more chapters now? One more chapter?
We have one more chapter and an epilogue. So yeah,
to see what, you know, obviously I think we've all walked, know what choice he's going to make, but we'll see what choice he makes.
Yep.
But yeah, I think it's quite a beautiful wrap up here. Both in it's sort of honest, it's very honest and real. And yet, I kind of want to sit in a big chair next to Dumbledore under a twinkling sky with all the mist and warm robes. Like, I kind of want that for myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to die, but I want all that. So
I agree with you. I think this is one of the things this chapter really does is that I think, you know, the whole time and with all the struggle that Harry has had, to be able to have this one last conversation with Dumbledore is fantastic. You know, I mean, he could always go and talk to a portrait of Dumbledore, but it's not quite the same. And here he's gotten that closure, I think, too, for the trauma of what happened at the end of the last year and into this year and the mistrust and the questions. And, you know, I think this is in some ways some wish fulfillment, because I think everybody would love to be able to have this opportunity to have one last conversation with somebody and kind of wrap everything up. And Harry gets that here. And it's the thing that will also, it does, it gives him that almost clean slate to kind of walk out now into the world again and do what Harry does best, which is help save everybody. So I can't wait to get there with you. But before we do, you know, where can everybody catch up with you, Drea, if they want to when you're not doing Owl Post?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
And you can find me on all of the social media platforms that I'm on. If just search for Matt Rushing 02. And then you can find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. Over on the TFM network doing a few shows. One is called the 602 Club, where we talk about all of the fandoms we love. Also doing a Snyder Cuts over there as we've been walking through everything Zack Snyder's directed. So you can find those both in the same feed. Also doing Literary Treks in the Orb. Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and the Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. But thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.